Hey guys, real quick before we get into the show, some of you may have noticed on Facebook that Bill is a part of the Doritos Super Bowl competition. He made a Super Bowl commercial for Doritos, and he needs your votes. So if you go to thedadpodcast.com, on the left-hand side, there's a link that says vote for Bill, and voting starts November 28th through December 14th. You can vote once a day, every day, and the name of the commercial you need to vote for is called Treasure Box, and it's very funny, worth a watch. Please help him out and support him. Thanks. Enjoy the show.
I'm here to tell you about Naptime Radio. It's a show for moms and dads, and these chicks are super cool.
Mac Daddy and Damia.
And they want you to listen.
Yes, we want it. We want it so bad.
I know you do. Heather and Kate offer helpful info for parents with their power naps. Oh, and did I mention? These chicks are sexy as hell, y'all.
Let's ride that train.
All I need is a ticket.
Let's eliminate one article of clothing for one meal. How about that?
Oh, now it's a party. So go to naptimeradio.com or click on the logo available on our site.
Nailed it!
Chase the sun and get crazy, have some fun. And if you're on the run, we're chasing the sun.
Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. This is episode number 28. As you saw in the description, my guest with me here today is Sandy Goddard. Hello, Sandy. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you. It's to give you guys a little bit of a backstory. Sandy's and my meeting up is almost romantic comedy-esque and serendipitous in that he was, you know, looking around on Twitter to connect with other comedians and gave me a follow. At the same time, I'm trying to find guests for the show. And so I went and checked him out. And just like social networking is intended to work, we are now socially networked. The unfortunate part was, is that we've been trying for 3 weeks, to make this happen, not to Sandy's, blame at all, but I had my, I think it was the last week or the week before, my son was in the emergency room because he got croup cough. It wasn't like he was, you know, dying, not that kind of emergency, but, and I was like trying to work out details to get my wife help just as we were trying to do the show. And I said, Sandy, I'm so sorry. Can we do this next week? and then I think it was the same, scenario, like the following week, or maybe there was something else. I think it was like a voiceover. I can't remember what was the following week, but so then here I am this week. We're actually recording this the week before Thanksgiving. And I lose my voice. So I was like, I can't leave Sandy hanging again. This guy doesn't know me. We've never had a conversation before this. And he's just going to be like, yeah, this putz. He tries to get me on his podcast. And then he just blows it off. What an idiot. So I appreciate, again, your patience, Sandy, and working with me. And I'm happy to have you on the show.
Well, that's what it is all about in comedy, is patience. Wait.
Just a lot of waiting and hoping and praying.
Checking emails.
Yeah. 23 hours a day. You're just alone. 23 hours a day. Are you actually home this weekend?
Yeah. I actually, I worked Thursday and Friday this week. Mm-hmm. And then I'm off this weekend. Next week I'm working at Side Splitters here in Knoxville. They actually had a host drop out on them.
Oh, right.
And they asked me to come down there and host next week for Thanksgiving.
That's great.
Which works out great because I'm off work and I get paid, you know, for that. So
yeah. Well, and that's your area too. Like, am I right? Don't you live near Knoxville or?
Yes.
Yeah. That's cool. That's
great. Yeah, I consider Side Splitters like my home club.
That's the best. Yeah, I wish I grew up in Modesto, California, so I wish I had like a club that was there, but there's nothing there. Nothing at all. The big thing is a Brendan movie theaters, and that's like, yay, you know. So you have, we talked a little bit before we started the show, you have two daughters, 10 and 4 years old. And since we're kind of on that topic, how do you deal with traveling, you know, and doing stand-up and stuff like that? And then, you know, still staying connected. Because I've had a lot of people ask me this week in particular, for whatever reason, I'm in Pleasanton, California, and a lot of people have come up to me and said, "How it must be so hard being away from your kids all the time. And, like, how do you do it?"
It is, and of course, you know as well as I do, you get out on the road, and you're pretty happy that first day just to be away from everybody.
Yep.
And then after that, you know, you start messing on them and wanting to call and talk to them and all that stuff. But I'm lucky enough to where I work at around here near my house is close, and so pretty much every day while I'm at home, I can come home at lunch and spend an hour with my one daughter that's not in school yet. Mm-hmm. And then my other daughter, I get up every morning that I'm here and I take her to school in the morning. So, I get, you just find little ways like that to spend time with them and connect with them, you know, while you're in.
Yeah. And FaceTime is like this humongous thing that I don't know how guys that were doing it before we've been doing it handled it. I mean, it's just such a nice thing to be able to look into their faces and talk to them face to face. And it's funny that you bring up that end of the week because, you know, this is Sunday. It's the end of the week. And I can already feel like a more nostalgic tone to the show because I'm like, man, I miss my wife and my kids. I can't wait to go home. And I'm even doing it because I'm in Northern California. After the show tonight, we have a 7 o'clock show tonight, and I'm with Heath Heitch, who's like, he does like a one man sketch show or what comics might call like a prop act. And so we have to put away all his stuff, and he and I are going to get in the car and just drive home right after the show, just so I could be home, even though I'll probably not get home till 3 in the morning. but I just so you could get home a little bit earlier and have a little more time because you're so excited. And I don't know if it always works out the same way for you, Sandy. In fact, I had a joke in my act about it where I would say that, you know, you're so excited to get home, and then the minute you walk in the door, to no blame to your children or your wife, usually it's, you know, the kids are screaming or somebody's crying or somebody's pissed or your wife is tired, and it's just like, yay, I'm glad I came back early.
Your wife yelled at you for everything that went on that week. Yeah. When you was going out having fun and partying.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my wife even said that to me because both of my kids have been sick. They've been bouncing it around, and then I think I caught a little bit of it. And so she's like, she said she did just accidentally, like she's just tired and going through her day. She's like, well, I'm going to jump off the phone because I have to go potty, which I also love that she's a grown ass woman who uses the word potty. And then I got to get the kids changed and everything. And I go, yeah, dear, anytime you're breaking down your day, you don't have to tell me that step. You know, not that I don't think it doesn't happen. Not that we've been together for 15 years. You don't, it's not like it's an unveiling, you know, or something. I've seen it happen, but I'm just saying that's a time saver there. You don't have to bullet point that for me because I think it's probably the most insignificant part of your day, to be honest, honey.
Right. Yeah. That's something we can skip over entirely. Like now to the time we go to our grave.
Yeah, and I told her, I said, she goes, well, okay, well, you just go back to your nice comfy pillows in your quiet hotel room. And I said, okay, simmer down. And it's been rough, man. Are your kids catching any colds? Is this the time of the year or what is it?
Yeah, my oldest daughter actually the other day got, she got that stomach virus. And the same thing here, she got it and then she passed it to me. I went to Myrtle Beach the last weekend. And when I was over there, I had that crud pretty much all weekend over there from that, you know, which made me miss my kids even worse. All the viruses and stuff they bring to us.
Yeah. It's funny because this was the first time that we've had like a ping pong where my younger son in the first week of November, Natalie had to take him to the emergency room because he had croup cough. We later found out like he was just, you know, coughing a lot, but no real congestion. And then I get home just in time for him to get over it. And then my older son to catch it. And then I get him kind of over it. And then just as it's about time for me to leave for the road again, my wife starts to get sick. And then the younger one starts to spike a fever. So I get him into the doctor hoping I can get, you know, they give him like a steroid now. And I don't know how this works. I don't know how long it's been happening, but they literally are juicing kids because it energizes their immune system and helps them fight off the infection better, which I thought was really interesting. And then so then I'm leaving and I take him in. I'm like, well, so I can get a prescription. And the doctor says he's just cutting a molar. That's why he has a fever, which I was like, oh, thank God. teething is not contagious.
The way it always works out the same way. Like my oldest girl gets sick, then I get sick, then my youngest daughter gets sick, and my wife's always the last one to get sick in the family.
Yeah.
So by the time we went through all the remedies to everybody else, by the time we get to my wife, I just hand her like a jar of moonshine and some honey and just say, you know, lay down for a couple of days. You'll be over here in a day or two.
Oh, damn it. I wish I grew up in the South. God damn.
Yeah, we keep a container of moonshine out here in our garage for this such occasion.
Yeah, you call it the medicine, is that?
Yeah. And then I wonder, you know, when we get 80 or 90, why my wife's an alcoholic.
Yeah, but at that point, who cares? Your kids are raised. You probably got a few grandkids that are grown up at that point anyway. You don't have to be responsible anymore.
Time to take care of us. I'm going drinking.
Exactly. I completely. If I make it past 80, I'm just going nuts. I might even try heroin. I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, why not at that point?
That's awesome. We'll be down here in about 10 years regardless. If it takes 10 years off my life, then it'll probably be a good thing.
That's awesome. That's funny. You know what I like is that my dad, I grew up in Central California, and I've actually just started telling this joke again in my act while I was here this week. And my dad made moonshine in our garage when I was a kid because he decided he wanted to make beer and wine. And somehow part of that process for him was also to make moonshine. And so he made a couple jars of the stuff. Now, I imagine growing up in Tennessee that that's a big part of the culture there on some level. But in California, that's like it's more of a chic thing. Or I don't know, not chic, but my point is that they had a party. And this guy had never had moonshine before, and he asked my dad to pour him some, and those people got hammered. They were not used to how strong it was, and so once you get back past the taste, they're like, oh, good, and they just slam a bunch of it, not knowing that it's going to catch up with them. And they just went nuts. A chick fell and split her head open. Like, they were dancing around naked in my living room, and I'm 15 years old, and I had to take him to the emergency room because I was the only sober one in the house. And then the part that I never talk about in my act is that my older sister came home from work. She worked at a grocery store, and she was working overnight. Came home in the morning at 7:30 and found the dude that started the moonshine drinking in his tidy whities in our front yard pissing on the lawn. And we didn't live on a farm. We grew up, it was a suburban neighborhood. And so she's like, come on, Dick, you got to come inside and pee. You're not in Kansas anymore. Let's go. And he was still hammered.
Well, the craziest thing about moonshine is they have what we call a consumer moonshine, which they make and they sell to the public now that they've legalized moonshine. And then they have true moonshine, which you've got to go up in the hills here in Tennessee and, you know, go back in the, you know, the Hatfield McCoy area and get the real moonshine. Now that stuff is so smooth. It's like drinking water.
Oh, really?
And the first night I ever drank it, I remember I was at my house and I was probably about the same 15, 14, something like that. And drank enough of it to be really messed up and woke up, had to use the bathroom, went to use the bathroom and, got told the next morning that I didn't actually go to the bathroom. I went in my sister's room and used the restroom in her teddy bear chair. I don't need to be drinking that stuff no more. That's what it's going to do to me.
Yeah, I started watching that. There's that show, I think it's on Discovery or something, or maybe it's National Geographic, that they have moonshiners. And I honestly didn't know that it was such a popular part of the culture until I started watching that show. I mean, maybe they pump it up because it's a TV show, but they have a guy that's, you know, he's trying to make legit moonshine. And then there's the rest of them are still like they go in the backwoods and like one guy's they make it, I guess, the old way with like a copper pot and stuff. And they got found out. And so they have to leave their equipment there. And what I thought was interesting, too, is that they said that in a season that these guys could pull in $100,000 by making moonshine. I was like, damn, I would do that, too. Jesus Christ.
Well, so that's what's funny about it. In Tennessee, like, you know, with people that smoke pot or weed or whatever, you know, you're talking to them and they're always like, I've got my weed guy. You know, I've got my guy. He gets me my stuff. But
yeah.
Here in Knoxville, they're like, you got your guy. And I'm like, yeah, I got my moonshine guy. You know?
That's what I was going to say. I was like, is that a thing where you have to go find a guy who's behind a 7-Eleven somewhere? he's got milk jugs.
They've gotten more brash about it now. Now they're pulling up at like businesses and stuff. And like they've got a crate of moonshine in the back of their 1974 Pinto. that they made last week. They're trying to sell to everybody.
I love it. And so was it a big deal in Tennessee? Like, you know how now it's all over the news that, you know, Colorado and Washington have legalized marijuana for recreational use. How long ago did they legalize moonshine in Tennessee?
I'm thinking it was around 09, 010, maybe.
Oh, really?
Somewhere around in there.
So it's still recently. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, real recently. Well, it was funny. A year after, or not even a year, it's probably 6 months after they legalized the making of moonshine, there was a big 36. It's like I'm going to say a 36,000 square foot facility opened in Gatlinburg, just specifically selling moonshine.
Wow. That's so interesting to me. I know this is a podcast for parents, and I've completely sidetracked it and now made it a moonshine podcast. But but it really is interesting to me. And I know what got us onto this is the whole idea of medicine. And that's why I was so curious, is that my father has these stories. My grandparents are from Texas, and they moved to California. My dad was the first one in that side of the family to be born in California. And they're cotton farmers and chicken farmers. And so my dad has these stories, you know, because I've been talking to him about my sons being sick. And I'm like, man, I'm just trying to take care of him. He's like, there's nothing you could do to those children. He said, he goes, when I was a kid, I would spike a fever and your grandfather would put Jack Daniels in a glass of milk, make me wear my winter clothes, put a sleeping bag in my bed and make me lay in the bed and sweat out a fever. And he goes, and that didn't kill me. And to me, that makes no sense. Like, medically, that's like, you could have died. But I'm sure, like, and I don't know if it's a weird thing for me. That's why I'm so curious about this idea of, like, the moonshine culture and everything, is that I feel like, me personally, I have, like, a Southern connection in roots, and I love Southern people and everything about the culture. But when I react to things like this, I wonder if I'm just a yuppie Californian, Yankee, for lack of a better term, who's like, hey, chill out. Yeah, it works, okay? It's proven science over hundreds of years. Or if it is just kind of that I guess, the Northerner opinion of Southern people being kind of dumb and like, yeah, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, but it works. It's fine, okay? Like,
Well, that's what, you know, before 1940, 1950, you had a lot more kids dying and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that, you know, around the 1950s or so, because they was doing all that crazy stuff, you know, feeding their kids hydrogen peroxide. And
yeah.
You know, if they can drink it, get it down, it'll fix it.
My dad had to take hydrogen peroxide.
They wasn't bleeding people still back in the 50s.
Putting leeches on them and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and that's funny too, because that almost makes it like the polar opposite of what we're dealing with today, is that what I wrestle with, and that I wish that he was tougher about it, but I can't blame him too bad, is that my son has the worst gag reflex in the world. And it's a weird thing for him to be a boy, and you want him to man up and go, just take the medicine. But and they have the cherry flavored, like, you know, Robitussin and crap. And you dip your finger in it. And you and I know from what we had to take when we were kids, like, you dip that to your tongue, you're like, that's damn right candy compared to what I had. That's bullshit. And so then you give it to him and he's like, oh, it's yucky. It's yucky. And it just puts me in this corner of being like, you don't know what yucky is, asshole. Yeah. You don't even understand what yucky is. And I got to put it in cranberry juice and even add some sugar to that shit and stir it up and then give it to him. And if he doesn't get it down fast enough, and then he's got to have a thing of juice he could sip right next to it. If that all doesn't happen perfectly, then he vomits everywhere. And then the medicine is gone out of his system anyway. And it's like, it's just insane to me that they have a steroid that they gave to him. He had to take an oral steroid and he couldn't even get it down. And they said it was cherry flavored. And I dipped that to my tongue and the cherry flavor almost made it worse. Like, I'm like, why haven't we invented something in this world of PlayStation and Game Boys and high definition television? Why can't we make a medicine that tastes amazing? I mean, they chemically engineer a Big Mac. Why can't they chemically engineer a cough syrup, right?
Well, that's what I was kidding my wife for a while back. If they would inject like chicken McNuggets from McDonald's with medicine and feed it to kids, that would be the greatest thing ever.
All the vaccinations coming through there. Oh my God, there would never be a disease again.
No, and that's what my daughter will eat a chicken McNugget, and she can swallow a chicken McNugget whole, but she cannot swallow a little half inch peel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I can't get it. Oh. And it's a weird thing, too, when you start giving medicine to the younger kids. Like, when they're babies, like my 16-month-old, he'll just choke it down. He looks at you like, why are you doing this to me? But it's like a weird reflex. He doesn't know how to not eat things. So he just swallows it down. And that's a sweet time. But when they get about 4, 5, 6 and up, then it's like you treat them like a dog, where I feel like I'm giving him a tablespoon of peanut butter. There's a pill in that he's going to lick it down.
Wrap it in cheese.
Yeah, exactly. It's just short of giving him a little raw hamburger patty and slapping it in a bowl in front of him and saying, here, get this shit down. And then it got to the point, too, where my son had a bad cough, my older son, and I couldn't even get him to take a teaspoon of honey. Like, he was taking like an inhaler to help with the cough, but you know how you get a tickle in your throat. I said, dude, if you just take some honey it'll coat your throat and you'll stop coughing. And he's like, no, and he thinks I'm trying to trick him. He thinks I'm trying to put medicine in the honey and that he's going to throw up. And I go, I'm not. Watch. I show him how I put it in there. And he dips his damn finger in it. And then he puts it in his mouth. And of course, when he does that, there has to be a strand of trail that gets all over the carpet from his mouth to from the spoon to his mouth. And he just touches it and can't. God forbid, he just licked all the little dollop of honey off his finger. He touches his tongue. Like, no, I don't like it. I'm like, who doesn't like honey? Are you kidding me? And I think these poor kids have to deal with frustrated parents that did nothing but take shitty medicine when they were kids and look at them and go, you don't know how good you got it. And you do. It's just this perfect storm of like, shut up and swallow.
Well, and something else too is nowadays, there's so much technology out there, just like us, you know, doing this over the internet.
Yeah.
You have so much access to technology where you can read about so many things that's wrong with so many kids. And you hear about it every day. And, like, that's the way I am with my kid could walk in the living room and sneeze, and I would be like, oh, my God, she's got cancer. You know, we got to go to the hospital. You know, to where back in the day, I remember one time when I was younger, we was outside, and my mom was practicing RN and had all the stuff, you know, like stitching up cuts and stuff. And I slid on my knee, and I tell you, there was a 2-inch gash on my knee. And I remember my mom sitting me up on the kitchen counter and putting ice on it and stitching it up right there on the counter.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, nowadays, I couldn't imagine, like, my old girl, you know, get the paper cut, and I'm wanting to go to the hospital, and you know what I'm saying? Give her medicine.
Get it all better. Make it better. And it's funny, like, I do talk a big talk, but I do, like, you look at my kid when, you know, both of them were spiking fevers and hardly able to sleep, and I hold them all night, and I just go, oh, man, I feel so sad, especially when they're babies. Like, you just feel... Because there's no way you could tell them, hey, I'm sorry that you feel this way and you want to make it better, but they can't really, they don't know, understand what's going on or why they feel just shitty. And yeah, I definitely can relate to that. My dad has great stories of they were shooting a bow and arrow at the farm, and they had a bunch of city cousins that were coming around, and everybody's playing at different areas of the farm. And then my grandfather had like a 3-foot pitchfork that he used to do to, you know, to break up hay bales and stuff for the cows. And the horses. And so they were throwing this pitchfork up against the side of a barn while these other kids were playing tag. And this cousin from the city ran across in front of him just as he lets go of a pitchfork and nails that kid through the shoulder to the side of the barn with this pitchfork. And the kid starts screaming. So they pull him off of the wall. And they were afraid they were going to get in trouble. So they ran in, and their remedy was iodine. So they grabbed the bottle of iodine, took the kid's sock. Like, I just love that these are kids that are probably 10 years old, and they instantly turn into Vietnam War veterans, and they take the sock off the kid and shove it into the kid's mouth so he'll stop screaming so loud. And then they just pour iodine in the hole. Like, that's going to be enough to take care of it. And he just screamed and screamed and screamed. And then eventually they got caught because there's no way to bandage it up. So, but I never, my dad doesn't, you know, really remember that part of the story. I'm sure that it was just as simple as they took the sock out of his mouth and wrapped it around his shoulder until he stopped bleeding.
And it's crazy the stuff you've done. Like, I remember when I was a kid, they was building a house across the street from me, and they had built it up to the first story. And it was concrete center blocks, and they had a big pile of sand off of it. And it was probably a 15-foot drop to this pile of sand. I remember being kids and jumping off the top of these center blocks onto the sand pile. And that was our fun for the day. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And my dad, of course, later on, my dad came and caught us. And it was probably maybe a half a mile walk from that house to my house. Mm. And I remember the whole way my dad was kicking both me and my sister. Like, he'd take a step and kick one in the butt. And then he'd take another step and kick the other one in the butt.
But and it's interesting too. I mean, I'm sure that there are areas that it still is a little bit like that, but there's elements of where kids today, and I never thought I would be this guy, Sandy. I never thought I'd be this guy where these kids today, they don't know, you know. But it's true. Like, there, I used to play in a wood pile in the back of my grandfather's house. Like, it was a pile of scrap lumber that he used for kindling in the fireplace. And it was probably 8 feet tall with nails and everything in it. And we would literally roll around in it. How we didn't walk out of there with a punctured lung and tetanus. I never had a tetanus shot when I was a kid. I never cut myself on any of the rusty nails that were in there. I don't know how it worked out. In fact, my favorite part of that is that my dad used to give me knives. Like, I had like a little knife collection when I was about 5 or 6, maybe 7. And one of the knives that he had found and I took from him, he didn't know I had it. was a switchblade, which at the time, and I think still is, illegal in California. But I had a switchblade, and I was playing with a switchblade in a wood pile of rusty nails. And I lost that damn switchblade in the wood pile. And I tried forever. My dad beat the hell out of me because I lost his switchblade. And I couldn't find it. And my grandfather literally burned up all that wood and still never found the switchblade at all. I don't know if it accidentally got thrown in the fire or something, but you'd think you'd at least see the blade. But yeah, me and my cousins, nobody ever got hurt. We just, you know, and rolling around and literally like splintered up wood, like with a jagged edge and a point. And we would be rolling down it like it was sand or a grass hill, and nobody ever got hurt. And I don't know how it happens to where... I understand the mindset. You look at it now, and I don't know if parents always had it or if people have just become more self-aware through like the news and always hearing stories about bad things happening to people. But I get scared all the time. There's moments where I have to snap myself out of it. Like what you said, you got a cough and it's like, oh no, you got cancer. I have tons of those moments where I just like, okay, calm down. Everything's fine. People have been doing this for hundreds of years, thousands of years.
Yeah. You got to talk yourself out of it. It's just like going, and I don't know if you're the same way, but I am. Like if I take my kids by myself, like I'm going to Walmart or somewhere.
Yeah.
In my head, constantly through Walmart, somebody's following me to take my kids.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm always turning around and looking like who. Somebody's going to grab them. Somebody's just watching and just waiting for me not to be paying attention. They're going to grab my kids.
I have the opposite of that. What I have is my wife is very much that way. She insists that the windows are closed at night. And I said, why? She goes, I don't want people looking in and seeing what we're doing. And I go, honey, nobody cares about what you're doing. So what I have, though, is I don't think anybody wants my kids at all. But what I have is that what if I'm like, you know, the boastful guy, you know what I mean? And so because I'm the guy with that mindset, my kids are the ones that are the easiest to take, you know, because I'll let them do whatever they got to do. Like I'm not a big hand holder in a parking lot. Like I tell my son, I go, you stay right next to me. I don't want him to run in front of a car. But I do have that in my head where it's like, well, because you're okay with it, you're the guy it's going to happen to, and it's going to make it even worse for you, you dumbass. And so I, you know, that's the constant worry and struggle in my head. And I don't know if you've ever talked to your parents about it, but I've had conversations with my dad where I go, man, how do you get over that fear thing? And he's like, what are you talking about? And I go, when I was a kid, didn't you always like be afraid for something that could happen to me or like worry that you weren't doing the right thing? And he just looked at me. He's like, No, I never had that.
Well, then back in that day, and it's the same thing. Back when I was younger, they didn't have that worry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, the kids being abducted happened, but that you didn't read about it as much because you didn't have that accessibility to hearing about it happening everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that all this technology, as far as parents goes, I think it's bad because, in a way, it makes you so paranoid about everything that's going on. You know.
Yeah.
I can see why parents put leashes on their kids now.
Yeah. I remember when those first came out and everybody made fun of them and everything. Yeah, I totally remember that. And now it's like, I kind of get it. Like, like at a place like Disneyland, especially, or something like that, where there's just a ton of people everywhere. Because I have that fear all the time if it's like a big crowd. Because Natalie's always like, be careful, keep him close. And I'm like, nobody wants our kids. But I know that it's just going to be that one day I'm going to turn around. And he's going to be gone, and I'm going to be an idiot.
Mm-hmm. I remember one day we was in Walmart, and my youngest daughter got into the big hide-and-seek deal, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, like, she always wanted to play hide-and-seek. And we was in Walmart, and she got in a clothes rack one time.
Oh,
in the center of it where we couldn't find her.
Yeah.
And this went on for, like, an hour. I mean, I was to the point of punching some old lady at Walmart, you know, just for the sheer satisfaction of punching somebody. Because I swore my kid was gone.
Yeah.
And... come to find out, she pops out and says, hide and seek, you know. Oh, my goodness.
And it's funny, like, because I don't – did you ever do that to your parents?
Yeah,
see, and that's what's so weird is that I have – my mom has that exact – same story, but instead of Walmart, it was a Mervyn's, and she was shopping, and she said, one minute you were right there, and the next minute you were gone, and I was looking around screaming, and she – I don't remember it because I was too young, but she said, I finally heard you laughing. And I followed the laughter, and I found you in the center of, like, Levi's jeans rack. And then when I found you, you were like, ha, 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 you know. And you thought it was funny that I couldn't find you. And she goes, I was so pissed. And my wife has the same exact story where she was just tired of following her mom around shopping. So she just decided to go lay down. in the center of the clothes at rack because there was a place where nobody would step on her and she wouldn't be in the way, and she fell asleep. So she didn't hear anybody calling for her or anything. She had passed out, and so they ran around. And so we all have those stories. I luckily haven't had that happen yet to me, knock on wood. But, yeah, and it's does it even enter your brain that you're like, well, I did this as a kid, or you're just so panicked that your kid's gone, you're just frantically looking?
Yeah, I'm just so frantic. I mean, after it's over with, you can kind of reminisce, though. I remember doing that when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
But as it's going on, you know, the worst case scenario is going through your head.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. What's it like? I get, because I only have boys. And so anytime we have somebody that has daughters, I always like to see what it's like on the other side of the fence. Is it, how is it different, do you imagine, for having girls to boys?
Well, the main thing is just the questions with girls. Like my girls aren't old enough to get to it yet, but of course, when they get to puberty, it's going to be, I told my wife, I said, from 14 on, they're all yours. I ain't dealing with none of that. I ain't talking about it, you know, all that good stuff. But it's the small things, I think. Like I've got nephews, that I can kid and joke with and have fun with, that if I do the same things with my little girls, it hurts their feelings.
You know, oh, really?
You can be a little more rougher with boys and things of that nature. Like my girls, I've got to play with them with kid gloves. I can't. I mean, if you just look at them the wrong way, they're going to break down and start crying.
Like teasing stuff? Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah. Just like I don't know. Just the whole thing about my youngest girl. She's always into Draculaura stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so she starts saying, "I'm Draculaura," and all this stuff. Well, you know, I said, you know, Draculaura is a cartoon and you can't really be Draculaura, and da da da, and give her a hard time about,
yeah,
you know, just that. And she'll break down and start crying because she's not Draculaura. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Where my nephew is about the same age and he talks about being like G.I. Joe or Transformers.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, it's a cartoon. There ain't no possible way you can be. And then, you know, he'll just go about his business.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
Yeah, he's like, well, in my world it is, and that's the way that, you know, where my girls are like, no, there ain't no way I am, and just start crying.
I like the added dynamic to that is that you're the guy picking on the little girl. Like, it's that's a lose-lose for you.
Yeah, and like me, I'm in the house with three women. That's why I told my wife, I said, I'm the most unluckiest guy in the world. I got three girls I got to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I can't even imagine. I mean, well, there's far enough in age where maybe you're old. Their daughter will be gone, but there could be a time in your life, Sandy, and I'm sure you've thought about this, where your daughters get old enough and then everybody's cycles line up. I guess that really happens, and then
yeah,
that's just a week. You got to be on the road, bro. You got to get out.
That's what I do. I have a joke that I do about my dad. I grew up with two sisters too.
Oh, okay.
And so being around women is not nothing new to me as far as living with, but I do a joke where I told my dad one time when I was younger, I said, that's not fair that me, my mom and my sisters get their own time of the month. And he's like, you know, you're right, son. It's not fair because 1 week out of the month, I'm going to start avoiding you too. And it's the same deal with me. It's like I told my wife, when that week comes, when they all sync up and everything's, you know, the world's coming to an end and there's hell balls and stuff coming down, I'm going to go get me a hotel room somewhere.
Just save up some Marriott points and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Hopefully I can book a show that week.
Yeah. You know. Well, it's funny too. My wife, I do things that I think are kind of creepy, and thank God my wife is who she is, but it's easy to me. And I know that socially it's kind of weird, but I have this app that I found on my phone and it's called Cycle Aid. And the intent of the app is to, when you find out that your wife or loved one, whatever, has started her menstrual cycle, you make a note in the app, and then the app tells you, you could change it and adjust it. But for the most part, it says, this is the time that she'll be PMSing. This is the time she'll be actually menstruating. This is the time she'll be fertile. And this is the day that she should ovulate, like on average, you know? And I showed her, like, and what all it was for me was that I just didn't want to have to, you know, deal with making a move on her and then have her say, I'm bleeding. You know what I mean? Like, that's all I was looking to avoid. And if it was as simple as a 99-cent app, then why not? You know? And so she goes, like, she said something about she was kissing on me or whatever. And she goes, because I was gone on the road and everything. And she goes, I shouldn't get you too excited. I said, yeah, I know you're on your period. And she goes like, huh? No, I'm not. I said, well, you're going to be. And then she was like, she goes, what? And then not 2 hours after I made that statement, Sandy, she was in the restroom. She's like, what the hell? Like,
it's crazy to me that they even have an app for that, first and foremost.
Yeah, but I love it.
I hear something like that, I'm thinking about the app the opposite way. Like, if they had an app for women, you know, to let them know that when their man was in the mood.
Yeah, that would be great. Although, you know, then that they might be running. They might be
going off like every 10 minutes.
That's, you know, you could just make a novelty app for that and a companion with the cycle aid. You just say, and it's just a 10-second alarm that goes off every time you activate the app. That would be the easiest 99-cent app to make, where you just, it's like that book, that novelty joke book or whatever, that says what men know, everything men know about women, and you open it up and all the pages are blank. It's like a 200-page book. You could just have the app open up and have it say, he's in the mood. But my husband's dead.
5 minutes.
Yeah. But my husband's dead. Yeah, he's still in the mood. He's in the mood.
That's the funeral right now.
Yeah, yeah. Rigor mortis is set in. Climb in that coffin. He's ready to go. He is locked and loaded. It's what he would have wanted. It's what he would have wanted.
Yeah. That's how he wanted to go.
But I showed her that, and she was like, so you know? And I was like, well, I guess I know now. And she's like, and then my wife knows me, so she doesn't get creeped out, but I've told other people about this, and you can kind of see that look in their eyes, that they have a smile on their face, but their eyes are saying something different, that they're like, you are weird and creepy as hell, dude. Like, who tracks their lady cycle? And I was like, why is that such a bad thing? Like, I get that, sure, that's not the way things are supposed to be, but my wife even said to me, she's like, great, now you can tell me when I'm going to need to take a pad to work or something. Yeah. And I go, you are welcome.
Yeah. Or your wife will say, well, at least you know now when it's time to go to the store and get me some tampons.
Exactly, yeah. I could throw them on the grocery list and then go pick them up. This is win-win for everybody. And you know what I love is that it's really, I think it's just to make the, I don't know if this is their intent, but I think it's like to make it look like that it's not creepy that to track your lady's cycle so that you can know when to not make a baby with her or that kind of vibe. So they give you, built into it, they have tips. Like, of things that you could do when she's PMSing that'll make her feel better. And then they even have my favorite part about it is that if you mess up on one of the tips, they have a shortcut that you can tap it and it'll take you to 1-800-Flowers.com and you can buy her chocolates and flowers to say sorry. And it's all built in within the app. It's a great app, CycleAid. I wish they sponsored the show because I think it's worth promoting. I love it. And it's funny too, because the other thing I do is I have that I have an iPhone, and so does my wife. So we have the Find My Friends, which it uses the GPS locator on your phone. So I'd be riding around on the road, and I'll call her, and she doesn't answer or whatever. And I go, well, let me find out where she is. You know? And I look at the thing, and people look at me like, you track your wife? I'm like, well, yes, I track my wife. And do I track her to make sure she's not banging a Pilates instructor? No, that's not why I'm tracking her. I track her because I'm usually 3 or 4 states away, and I've gotten phone calls at 3 in the morning saying I have to take our son to the emergency room or whatever. So there's that weird like anxiety that I have. So if I call her twice and she's not answering, and I'm a guy, I want to protect my family, but I know I'm far away. If I look at it and her phone is at her house, or at our house, her house. That's a Freudian slip if it ever was one.
Because the truth comes out.
Yeah. In my house, which is 2 blocks away, that I go to once a month. No. But if she's at the house, then I just know, oh, she's dealing with both the boys, can't answer the phone. But if she's, you know, out and about, then I have an idea of where she is and what she's doing. Like, and I know it sounds super creepy, but like one time I couldn't get a hold of her, and I wanted to get a hold of her to make sure the kids were okay. And then I saw that she was at the McDonald's near our house. And that told me, oh, the boys are okay. They're going out to McDonald's to have lunch. And okay, good. Everybody's fine. Like there's no sickness. Everybody's obviously feeling better. And I could get that information just by her behavior, monitoring her electronically. So just quit judging me, people. And I think what we should really be looking into is the way to actually geotag our wives in the way they do like sharks or water buffalo, so we could track them and know what they're doing at all times. How say you, Sandy?
I think that's a great idea. I think because, you know, I mean, most women have slip earrings anyway. And so we could just add one in between them up the earlobe.
Yeah, exactly. You know. I like it. Now, I like that you got all like James Bond on it. That's even smarter. I was thinking of literally just putting a collar on him.
We could send him some moonshine, pass him out, tag him, and go.
Oh, Sandy, we're going to be good friends. I can tell already. We've come up with three business ventures in the last hour, and this is great. We have the app for ladies when men are in the mood, and now we have the way to geotag your wife. This is going to be awesome. Now we just need to make up moonshine.
A lot of women viewers, I'm sure.
You know, it's funny. We have a lot of moms that listen to the show. For a while, it was almost more moms than dads, but now it's kind of become, shifted the other way. But I always wondered why moms listen to the show. And then we started getting emails from the moms that said that they listen to it because they like to get the male perspective. They like to
from comedians. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a very credible source, you know. And I think, and you know, it's funny that because I was like, really, like, what are you picking up? And we've literally gotten emails, multiple emails from women listeners that have said that, and no joke, that we have saved their marriage. Because, and I think they mean it as a compliment, but they've said that we've explained the stupid things that their husbands do.
Yeah. No, and I mean, this is, to be honest, will probably be the most truthful information they will get.
Yeah. It's like a locker room conversation. Yeah, exactly. Because I overshare all the time on the show with you. Even like I've cried on the show, which a lot of comics make fun of me for, is that like my favorite one was that one comic who really likes listening to the show was telling this other comic, he's like, oh, you should listen to the show. He's so honest and it's really good. And he goes, he's like, he cries on it. And the other comic was like, he cries on a podcast? And he goes, yeah. He goes, does he know that he can hit pause and get himself together?
Makes it more genuine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. or I'm just too much of an idiot. Like, I don't.
Well, there's a pause button. What's that?
Yeah, I don't understand. Oh, gosh, that's funny. But I also want to talk about this thing that I thought was interesting is that I've been having a kind of a rough go with my older son. He's been pushing boundaries, you know, and fighting us. And then when we do timeouts, I don't know if you do the same thing, Sandy, but any ounce of discipline. This is what I love, too, when people get up on a high – I'm not on a high horse. I've just decided to do timeouts because it's what's okay with me. If you want to beat the living hell out of your kids, I say more power to you. But this thing of I'm here to say that I don't really think it makes that much of a difference because you could hit your kid and he's going to cry or maybe – or something like that. But if you give him a timeout, what it does create, I found, is like this weird demonic possession where the kid just starts and like starts screaming at you and shaking and stuff and – and it's just, and so my wife gave him a timeout recently, and I was like, man. And I was talking to my buddy, and I go, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's because I'm spending too much time with the baby because he's been sick. And I know that the older one does kind of get neglected because I have to pay more attention to the baby. And I try to have special days that I can go out with my older son, and it's about him. And he's not, I don't think he's really jealous of his brother because he doesn't act out towards him in that way. But there are elements where you could tell that just something's not right, you know, something like not mentally, but you know what I'm saying, Sandy? Am I making sense? Yeah, that he's just he needs a little something more than what he's getting kind of vibe. And I'm trying to figure out how to do that and everything. And this guy said something to me in the you know, kind of context of this whole conversation. And he doesn't even have kids. And I thought it was so unbelievably profound and something I'd never realized before. He said, you realize, he goes, maybe you need to look at it this way. One day, Jacob is going to grow up, and he is going to have a conversation much like you and I are having right now in a car with a friend or something like that, or maybe even his wife or girlfriend, and he's going to say, my dad screwed me up because he did this. He said, because we all have that. We all look at our parents and said, oh, they did this, and they really screwed it up. And I have that. I, you know, when my mom and dad split up, my mom bailed, and I used to have these like really heavy emotions about it. And then now through having kids and some therapy and all that stuff, I've kind of realized that, no, it's just natural kid stuff. Like you're just a parent trying to figure out what you're doing. And so I never would have figured that out had I never had kids. And I don't know what it was, but it kind of jerked me out of this mindset of going, I like to be friendly with my kid, and I never felt that I had to be his friend more than his father. But when he said those words to me that one day he's going to say, yeah, my dad did this, and it really screwed me up, that it kind of took the pressure off a little bit and made me go, you know what? Yeah, no matter what I do, even if I nail everything, there is going to be something that is on the bottom of good things I did. there's always going to be something bad that I did. So why worry or obsess about it and just go, hey, I'm doing the best I can and I'm going to love you. And when you're older and you can understand why I did what I did, we can have a conversation about it and we can have a back and forth. I don't know if you have, is that relatable to you at all, Sandy, or no?
Yeah, and the main thing, and I've thought about this a lot, is and the long and the short of it for me is I don't want to do anything to my children when they're younger to cause them to have to go to a therapist when they're 25.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the long and the short of it. I have two rules. I don't want to do anything to cause them to see a therapist when they're 25, and I don't want to give them – I don't want to like spanking. I don't particularly care for spanking as much, not that I don't think it's right, as much as I don't want to give my kids any sexual fetishes while they're older. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's two rules I have about, you know, disciplining my kids that I've stuck a song and tutu because that's one thing I don't want on my head when they get older.
And I want you to know that the reason I laugh when you said about the sexual fetishes is that I wasn't I don't know if you were making a joke or not. But I took a child development course when I was going to school to be an elementary school teacher before I started doing stand-up. And this lady was talking about child psychology and how they develop early on. And she said, like, you know, she was talking about how kids that grow up in abusive households, what happens is the fight or flight portions of their brain become overstimulated. And so they become like either skittish or really aggressive, like, and before they even develop cognitive thinking, because that part of their brain is so heavily stimulated because they don't feel safe. And he goes, so like, you know, that's why it's not good to scare your kid. And she saw me give a look and she goes, what? She goes, I saw your face change. And I go, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. But I go, my dad scared me all the time when I was a kid and I used to love it. Yeah. It was like part of our fun. So I think there's a context to it because I don't feel abused, you know? And then she started talking to me about how my dad would, she wanted me to talk to her after class because she was curious. So she told me, like, how would you be disciplined when you were a kid? I said, well, he would either thump me in the head or sometimes knuckle me in the head or spank me, send me to my room, which I've, as I grew up, realized was for my own safety to get me away from him. And then later he would come in, and what I always thought was cool is he would talk to me, and he would say, hey, this is why I got upset. And we would have, like, he would come and tell me, and we would have, like, a hug, and it was cool. And she goes, oh. And then this chick, who was just a teacher at a junior college, was like, do you like to be spanked sexually? And I go, excuse me? Like, she goes, do you like to be spanked sexually? And I said, no. She goes, really? She goes, I'm not going to judge you. And I go, no, I would tell you honestly, like, no, not at all. Like, that seems weird to me. And she goes, well, most kids that are spanked and then hugged afterwards, it actually enforces that idea of it makes it a pleasurable experience. And so they enjoy it when they get older. So again, I don't know if you were joking or if you knew the same thing, but that's why it made me laugh so hard. I didn't want it to be a thing where you're like, ha ha, that's not a real fear, that I was laughing because I had actually heard somebody else say that exact same thing.
Yeah. And that's what I've heard. You know, I've heard psychologists say the same thing, and it sounds funny to say, but in all reality, it's true. You know, I don't want to reinforce anything in my kids for when they get older, because, you know, a lot of stuff that you do to them when they're younger, it has major consequences when they get older.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I don't want to, you know, at 25 in a psychiatry office talking about, you know, drumming up memories of dad spanking her, and you know what I'm saying? That's why she's messed up like she is, or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, and I it's interesting. I mean, maybe it's because on my side of the coin is that, and that's one of the things that I thought this, I felt, here's the thing. I'm not saying this to make it seem like I'm arguing with you by any means. Like, I completely understand what you're saying. I think that for me, as somebody who actually went to therapy, because I had a moment when my older son was 3 months old, and you have that thing where you're tired and they're not stopping crying and you don't know what it is, you know, and I kind of, you know, I don't know if you went through the same thing, but I got afraid. Like, I had to put him down because I thought I might do something that would hurt him or something, you know, because I was kind of freaking out a little. And I said, I don't know what the fuck you want. Like, I yelled at him. Yeah. And my wife, and this is after I tagged my wife out, where she was talking to him through her teeth, where she's like, just go to sleep, you know. And I have a joke in my act where I say that, you know, women complain that men don't get up when the baby cries a lot of times. And I think it's because women are biologically engineered to hear a baby cry and wake up. Men are biologically engineered to hear a woman talk to their baby through their teeth out of anger, and that instantly wakes them up. Like, because I've heard my wife in a dead sleep go, just shut up. And I go, I got to save my baby.
Yeah.
And yeah, so and
I think every parent has been to that point to where, and that's what happens is I think the parents, the good parents are the ones that say, okay, I'm at a point where I cannot deal with this the way I need to. I need to set this kid down and just let it cry or what have you. And then there's the ones that you hear about the next day where you find the baby in the dumpster or, yeah, you know, drowned in the bathtub. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
And that's not, I don't think that's a funny situation, but I think it's a serious situation because those are the parents that are maybe not as mentally stable that don't take the time to say, okay, I need to get away from this situation for 30 minutes and calm down and come back and deal with this with a clear head.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I hope this isn't getting too heavy handed, but I do think it's unbelievably unfair and doesn't make sense that we live in a society where you have to have a license to get to drive a car. You have to have a license for, you know, to be a contractor. In most jobs you have to be certified in. But to actually create a person and to raise a person, you have to, you know, you don't have to do anything other than get in the back of a car. Like, that's about it.
Yeah.
And I think
that's what I heard a guy say a long time ago, one time, which it's changed a lot now. But when I was younger, I had one of my uncles, which I looked up to, told me, he said, the only thing you got to do to have a baby is be 16.
Yep.
That's it. You know, because back then, that's when most of them now, hell, they're 12, 13 years old doing all that stuff. So.
And it's interesting, too, that because here's what that says to me is that I think subconsciously what that says to our civilization is that we're okay with that. On some level, either we don't want to deal with it or we're okay. I'm not necessarily judging it either. I'm not happy about it, but that we're okay with those kind of tragic things happening and people being ill-prepared to have children and do that, because it's also not something that is necessarily pushed within our culture. I mean, when I say our culture, I guess I'm speaking from like more California. I don't know if when, you know, in Tennessee and on that side of the coast, if in your school, it's like, listen, because I thought it was really interesting. One of the best points I thought was made during the debates in the election was when Mitt Romney, even though he was kind of dodging the point of the question, when he said that, he goes, you know what, if you want to talk about gun control and issues of violence, that issue starts with parents in the home. You have to start teaching dads that they have to stick around and they have to stay, and moms and dads need to be married and plan to stay together before they start a family. Now, I think that there are anomalies and that maybe necessarily marriage doesn't have to exist, but I do think that there is something said that people making that, being more educated about the conscious decision of having a child and there being a shame culture that's built to where if you do that and you're not doing it right, that there has to be something that motivates you to start to get your shit together and start doing it. Because I watch like that show, I've only seen like snippets of it, but that show Teen Mom on MTV, and you watch it kind of afraid, like you're like, oh my God. And these kids, they're kids going through this like crazy drama, and you look at them and there's a little bit of like a white trash element to it sometimes, where it's like they're fighting for the sake of drama and it doesn't even make sense. And every time that kid walks into frame, that little baby comes up to get a hug from his mom, it just melts my heart. And I at first I was like, God, why are they putting this on television? And then I kind of realized, I'm like, that's why. Because that's what it makes me feel, and that's going to motivate me to either A, hopefully if I'm a 15-year-old or whatever, that's going to be like, I don't want to be that, or B, that it makes me motivate my kids so that they don't become that. And I'm not trying to say that there aren't people. My stepmom, she got pregnant when she was in high school with my sister, and she you know, dropped out of high school and became a mom 2 years later, had another kid. And that mom, that chick is a great mom. She saved my life. And there are people that are wired that can handle it, but I think it's definitely a skewed statistic that more often than not, you're going to find these single teenage moms or teenage moms that are going to struggle with parenting than there are that are going to embrace it.
Yeah, and that's what I have. You know, just like the 16 and pregnant show, you know, like you're saying, there's goods and bads of it. It kind of shows you, you know, shows kids things that happen. You know, if you take that route in your life, this is what it's going to be like. And I think there are certain aspects of that's a good situation. But in my thought process, and there's one of my buddies, Corey Forster, does a joke about it, which I think is excellent. He says, you know, he said that show 16 and pregnant, he said, that's a great show. He said, but, you know, why don't we enhance the good things that kids do, you know, like 18 and graduated. You know? And I think that is the, I think that is the thought process I am. I don't mind that 16 and pregnant because it shows certain aspects of that situation.
No, it's a solid point. You're right. Yeah, he's right.
The good things in life.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of an it's the same kind of association I think people have with the Kardashians, where it's like, so wait a minute, like literally the chick was famous for her boyfriend posting a sex video of her, and now she's got tons of shows and people care what she thinks, and that just kind of goes away. And again, I don't know, I feel like I'm doing a lot of backpedaling or sounding like I'm backpedaling, and I'm not backpedaling. It's the honest truth. I really don't care if you want to make a sex video and put it on the internet. All I'm saying is big picture. Big picture, if this is the society and the culture that's happening, that is not going down a path that I think we all would agree is the way we want it to go. That's not an ideal situation where celebrities are becoming celebrities because they're literally posting videos of them having sex with someone else. That's not the kind of person that we want to elevate. Or maybe it is. Maybe that's what it is. But for me, I'm like, well, that's not what's interesting to me. So I don't care either way. It's not affecting my life. But I think that if there's going to be some kind of shift, and I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm sure that everything, it gets pushed, gets pushed to a breaking point, and then it just overcorrects the other way, and then we're probably going to be living in like some kind of, you know, Puritan society where then the heathens are going to be like the pilgrims or whatever, that are going to go to some other country, and it's going to be a reset. I don't know, but interesting.
They do the deal like just like the sex tapes, you know.
Yeah.
They put those out there because, of course, any movie star, you know, people want to see what they live like.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How they live their lives, and I think that's why the reality TV is so special. Well, then they put out sex tapes, and people will watch them because they're, you know, in their heads, I'm thinking people are saying, oh, they do something special. You know, they must be awesome. They must do all this crap. Well, if you watch one of them sex tapes, it looks like two Barbie dolls sitting in the bed. You know what I'm saying? It ain't nothing worth watching. I've watched dogs have sex and got more out of it than I have watching some of them.
Oh, Sandy, you're my new best friend. That's Oh, that is the best. I've seen dogs have, and it couldn't be more true because I've seen clips of that Paris Hilton tape, and it is the weirdest thing. Like, I'm like, who finds this sexy? Like, I'm so unbelievably distracted by her obsession with looking at herself in a camera, and I can't get my mind wrapped around the psychology of, like, this is what she wanted, and then when it went public that she's pretending like that's not what she wanted, when I know, I could see it in your eyes that you're like, man, if everybody could just see me naked, their life would be so much better. And it's not, lady. I mean, you're not even really that pretty, to be honest, you know? Like,
you're sitting there watching that sex tape, and like, and I seen it, one of my buddies showed it to me, and I'm sitting there watching it thinking, she's having sex like I would imagine Paris Hilton would have sex.
Yeah. It's like,
you know, I'm going to lay here and look at myself in the camera and you do everything else.
You just, and I don't even know you're there. Like, that guy is just. And
yeah. He's on town and she's like checking her makeup. Yeah. And her hair.
Which is probably the worst sex. Like, you want somebody who's in there with you. Like, yeah, you want it. Like, good sex you want to see is almost like a wrestling match or something. You know what I mean? You want there to be some aggression.
I would love to see Paris Hilton give that guy a pile driver. That would have been the greatest thing in the world, I think.
Like, she does it opposite. She's not like, he's tucked down and all in this weird position.
You know, could you imagine her just sitting up and wrapping her arms around his waist and just standing up and just jumping off the bed like a super pile driver?
Oh, you mean like a wrestling pile driver. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the pornographic pile driver, but you mean like literally like... She takes advantage.
I'm talking WWE.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, sir. I apologize. Both of them equally interesting, in my opinion, if I can.
You know, now that you say that, it would have been interesting to see the other one.
Yeah. Here's what I'd like to see now. I think, again, now we've got our fourth business ventures. We're going to get her back in the studio, and we're going to shoot this. And just when he feels comfortable, she's going to whip him around, pile drive him off the bed, you know, almost like an off-the-top rope situation. He's going to be incapacitated, and she's going to immediately follow that into a reverse pornographic pile driver, and then everybody wins. That's and then we play, we have the Stars and Stripes going in the background
and everything.
Yeah, Stars and Stripes in the background, God Bless America, and boom, big finish. That's no need for a money shot.
What do they call it, the narcissist?
Yeah. We'll just call it like that. That'll be the name of our video. You know, it'll be like Apocalypse Now, just a cool title. It'll be awesome. Well, Sandy, we did it. So we're going to wrap up with some moments of the week. Thank you again for, well, I don't have to wrap it up that well, but we'll do some moments of the week. So just hang tight. I have this little intro.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
My moments of the week, I have, Jack, has found a little, my parents brought some toys that were my toys when I was really, really little, and my wife took them out of the box, and I was really happy about this because I'm not big into keepsakes, and so she let the kids play with them. And so I guess I had like this little baby, toy when I was a real little kid or something, and my younger son likes it, and he takes it around, and he says, baby, baby. And it's hilarious because there's an element that you can't fight. I wish I was a better man that, you know, he's like, oh, he's playing with a doll. Is that, you know, and then I quickly wash over that. But what I love that takes me out of that moment is that he'll kiss it and he's being real sweet to the baby and he'll go kiss the baby and then he throws it down the stairs. like literally, I'm not exaggerating, like literally drops it off the railing on the upstairs so it falls down 10 feet. And I'm like, okay, we got to worry about him with kids. Babysitting is not going to be his thing. Like, and with Jacob, my older son, he took his first school pictures, and we didn't know like what was like we didn't know what to expect. We had very like a low expectations because I've had school pictures. We've all been there where they just look horrible. The wonderful ladies over at Naptime Radio, they were talking about their school picture drama that just happened to them, but. I'll be damned if this kid didn't have the most adorable pictures in the world. And I don't, it was a weird thing that, and even though I wasn't face to face, I've been on the road and my wife sent me the link to him, but it almost like kind of welled me up a little bit with tears. And again, it's because I've been gone for almost a week. And as we were talking about earlier, I get a little bit more emotional because I miss him that much more. But you see this adorable picture where he's just smiling and he's not even doing that goofy smile when you take a regular picture. Like the photographer had to have known what they were doing. Because he got like this perfect, like just snapshot. And then he had him do the hand or the head and the fist, you know, almost like the Rodin pose, you know, like, and it just looks so damn cute, that I loved every minute of it. And I can't wait to go home and, hug the shit out of that kid. So it's your turn, Sandy.
I got, one of my favorite stories just happened this week. I was, my daughter has a school project for music class where we had to build a flute out of household products, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, with that being said, I left and went to Lowe's and bought some PVC pipe and end caps and all the stuff to build it with. Uh-huh. Anyways, we get back and you got to drill holes in this piece of PVC pipe. Uh-huh. And of course, going through the PVC pipe's fine, but when I got to the end caps, I had to drill a hole in. The drill caught and just broke it like into a million pieces. You know?
Oh.
My oldest daughter, which was sitting there, she was all for it up to that point when it exploded and realized that, oh my gosh, this possibly is dangerous what we're doing here. And so she, when we got done with it, she asked me if we could go out and buy a flute. And she said, let's just go out and buy a real flute and then just paint it. And it looked like it was made at home. And I was like, no, you know, we can't do that. I mean, we're going to have to make it. Well, my daughter pops up and goes, well, Dad, if we die during this, I don't think you'll be forgiven for it.
I love those moments where it's like they don't understand the complete logic, but their logic makes more sense than, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's so simplified that they make a lot of sense. Yeah,
I like that.
My youngest
I don't...
daughter, the only other the story I got is my youngest daughter when we was potty training her. You know, of course, when you're training your kid to potty, we kept telling her put your poo poo in the potty. You know,
yeah.
We told her that for weeks. You know, you got to put your poo poo in the potty and all that stuff. And she, but we never fully explained to her not to do it with her hands. That was the greatest day in the world. She come into the living room and was telling me, you know, she'd put her poo-poo in the potty and of course had it all over her hands. And me being the great dad that I am, I didn't want to discourage her at all. So I told her to go give her mom a hug. Oh, her mom loved me after that.
Oh, I bet. That's great. All right. Well, you can give us a call, 408-228-4911, or send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. You could go for my stand-up dates. I'm traveling everywhere. I'm going to be in Hartford this weekend, Raleigh the weekend after that, Birmingham, Alabama before Christmas, and then in Denver for 2 weeks for New Year's and the week after. All of my dates are available at justincomedy.com. I want to say thank you to everybody who's been following me on the Twitter. I appreciate that. I've had a lot of fun talking to a lot of you guys. You could follow me on Twitter at Justin Worsham. You could follow the show on Twitter at Dad Podcast. I try to talk to people, but mostly I use that just as a way to tell people, hey, I might be late on an episode or that kind of stuff. But if you want to start talking to me there, that's totally fine by me. Sandy, you could find him at sandygoddard.com. That's G-O-D-D-A-R-D. Or just look in the description, and I've got a link in there for you. Or you could follow him on Twitter at Sandy Goddard. He's going to be at the Knoxville Splitters, or Side Splitters, I'm sorry, in Knoxville, Tennessee on New Year's Eve. So definitely go check him out. Or if you're listening to this in the year 2087, just go to sandygoddard.com and you can find out where he is going to be. Sandy, I cannot thank you enough for doing this show. I can't wait to do more episodes. This is great running into each other on the social network and had a great time. I hope you had fun.
Yeah, it was great. I enjoyed doing it, and I will be happy to come back anytime.
Awesome. Thank you so much. On behalf of my new friend, Sandy Goddard, this is Justin Worsham saying, stay frosty.